Welcome to Game On Business Talk Radio with your host, Dr. D. Anthony Miles. Our program is not afraid to discuss controversial business ideas and topics. Get ready for an unfiltered discussion of problems and solutions that today's businesses, large or small, face daily. Now, here's Dr. D. Anthony Miles.
Hi, this is Game On Business Talk with D. Anthony Miles. We have an awesome show for you today. Get some coffee and have a seat. You're going to need a Bible and a seatbelt. This is Game On Business Talk Radio on WDJY 99.1 FM. Our topic today is bad management practices and bad management practices in companies. And we have a wonderful guest for our show today. So let me give you some insight into our topic today. Our show today is with our guest, Vicki Wright Hamilton. She's managing partner, founder of VWH Consulting. Vicki is an accomplished technology executive with over 20 years experience in highly matrixed companies. Vicki is an expert and visionary with an eye for operational excellence that balances people, process. As a trusted advisor to business leaders and executives, Vicki provides consulting services on transformational initiatives, regulation, compliance issues, and risk management strategy. She has an MBA from management from St. Louis University. She has a BSBA in Management Information Systems from University of Dayton. I want to welcome our guest today, Vicki Wright Hamilton, founder, managing partner of VWH Consulting.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I've been looking forward to this show all week. Vicki, I want to get right into our show because a lot of people have really been concerned about some of the business decisions and companies that they've been making, and some of these decisions don't make any sense. And I want to, if you can tell the audience, you know, other than my bio, something quick about yourself, you know, tell our listeners something they should know about you.
Sure. I don't want to take a lot of time from talking about myself because I really want to get to this topic. But the bottom line is that through my career and professional opportunities, I have seen, I have observed, I have been involved in, and I have coached when it comes to bad management practices. That's about 10 years ago is when I started my business. And I take a lot of opportunities to work with clients, organizations, and individuals to help them from not only management practices, but how to deal with change management, how to deal with talent, and how to make it be more inclusive as we continue to move forward. So we'll talk a little bit about that today.
Oh, great, great. Goodness, we have an expert about management practices or bad management practices. And I want to ask you, Vicki, what is bad management or bad management practices in companies, and why is this important?
Well, first of all, I think that when you start to talk about bad management, you have to define it. One of the things that we have to understand is that every company has a culture. That culture is the bloodline. That culture is the way in which they operate. It's the environment. It's the way people feel when they come into the organization. So bad management can be compounded by the kind of culture that you're in. And that management has to also be where it is individualized for every individual that you come in contact with, because we're all different. We're not all the same. I do believe, however, that there are some good practices that we can utilize, but the way in which we utilize them may be different. Those good practices are all around not only your inclusivity, your relationships, your communication, your ability to help others grow, your ability to be invested in the development of others, your ability to work collaboratively across the organization. So when you don't do that, that constitutes bad management practices. And it can intimidate, it can have impact, and it can definitely have the organization come out on a negative side when it comes to getting their results and what they're trying to obtain or do.
Vicki, I want to explore that because you raised an interesting point. And tell me if you agree with this. You can't have a good company with bad management. Is that possible?
Well, it depends. You can have a – how do you define a good company, first of all? Because the idea is people work in organizations all the time and deliver, and you get your product or service done, and it can still be a bad company. The challenge is what impact is it having on individuals from a health perspective? What impact is it having on individuals from a productivity perspective and their ability to be happy? So can the work get done? Yes. But what happens is that when you get in those kinds of environments, if you as an individual do not want to be a part of that, that's when we get into turnover. So the company can be look good on the outside from results, but they can have constant turnover and be spending more money, losing more money, and not making it to their full potential because of bad practice. Because remember, the people do the work. It's up to the individuals to get the work done. So if people are continually leaving and are going somewhere else, the company is having to continuously reinvest. They're making money. They may be doing fine, but they could be doing much better. So I think it's all relative as to what you and how you define what is a good company. If we begin to talk about a best place to work company, I want to work for that organization. I believe in their culture. I believe in how they operate. Now, that's a different story. It's kind of like Jim Collins' book that says, let's go from good to great. I can go from a good company to a great company because I feel invested. I feel a part of, and I want to see that organization to succeed.
That's an interesting perspective, Vicki. I want to ask you this because you made me think of something while you were going over your points. One of the things that we see a lot, and I don't know if this always been around, we just didn't have a name for it, was workplace bullying. And workplace bullying comes from bad management. And can you expound on that? What's been your experiences with bad management and that tolerates a culture of workplace bullying?
Absolutely. So what happens is the workplace bullying comes from the fact that you may have managers that are all about control. You have managers that want it their way or the highway. They don't listen. They don't hear you. They don't communicate. So they don't include you when it comes to getting your ideas. And what happens is that individuals feel very bullied because if I say something, if I go against something, they're going to take it out on me, right? I'm going to be mistreated. I'm not going to be included. I'm not going to have opportunities, et cetera. So workplace bullying can be a very intimidating method, if you will, to your employees and the people that you interact with. And those employees then end up costing you more money as an organization. Because let's face it, if I'm being bullied at work and I don't feel like I can truly be my authentic self, that I truly can come to work and do my job well without any ramifications, it can have impacts on my body. When it has impacts on my body, it has impacts on your health insurance. When it has impacts on health insurance, you're paying more. When you're having to get into employee assistance programs and people are having to use counseling more, it costs you more. Likewise, it also costs you in your productivity.
Wait a minute. That when bullying actually costs companies money, is that right, Vicki?
Absolutely, it costs money because if I
am
in an environment where I am happy, and these things start to cost more, guess what? If you go anywhere to work, and everybody knows this, you're not giving your best performance. I might be doing really, really well in my job, but I could be doing really, really great in my job, but I don't feel like I can do it because I'm always worried about getting bullied. I'm walking on eggshells. I'm continuously trying to determine, okay, if I do this, what's going to happen? What's the ramification over here? What are they going to do to me next? Am I going to get an opportunity for growth? Am I going to get an opportunity for development? And I think companies have to realize that as individuals leave their organization, they take that intellectual property with them. So you can't take what's in their brain. You can't take what they've already learned. So when you bring somebody else in, you're starting from scratch again because they have to learn your business, even if they understand the industry.
Vicki, I got to ask you this. Why aren't these companies paying attention to the bottom line when it's costing them more money when they have these bad managers, especially with bullying? Why don't they see that it costs them money for these type of practices?
So let me take you back to something that we talked about a minute ago. It's all going around the culture and the leadership. If I, as the CEO or the leader of this organization, I believe in bullying. I came from that school of thought. I came from a background that bullying works and it makes things happen and people work harder and people do more. I'm more concerned about how I'm doing in that culture than really thinking about the impact on the bottom line. See, a lot of times we do things, but we don't necessarily associate them back to the organization's bottom line. You have to care. You have to want to see the most valuable asset within your organization, your people, because remember, people do the work. If they are feeling bad, if they are not feeling a part of, you're going to lose money. But we don't like to look at things that way. We don't like to think that the impacts and those behaviors can have problems to the bottom line, especially if I believe in that practice. This is why it is so important that when you're going into an organization, when you're looking at a business, what culture do they have? Remember, an interview is a two-way street. Not only do they want you, but do you want to be there? How do they operate? What have you heard? And, you know, it's really interesting because we know the power of social media today. And people will tell things on social media that they may not feel as comfortable saying inside of the workplace. But when people say, I think I want to go work at that job, at that company, they're quick to tell them, no, you don't. Let me tell you about the culture and how it works. You don't want to be here. I'm trying to get out, right? So I think it's really important that we understand those ramifications, but business leaders don't always associate it. You have to care. It has to mean something to you as a leader to make that association.
That's an interesting observation because I was just thinking about something. Does the bad practices start? Let me, you know, give you an example, Vicki. Like they hire a guy and he got in nepotism. You know how that works. And he gets a department and he just starts throwing people out. He wants to hire his buddies or whatever. Is that where it starts?
Oh, it sure can start that way. You know, the other thing is that when we go into management practices in your organization, first of all, are you allowed to hire from nepotism, right? So if the answer is yes, and you got somebody in there, or I hired them because they're my buddy and they're down the street. But then they get inside of the organization and begin to perform, and you may find out, they don't know what they're doing. They're only there because of the buddy. Well, eventually that will catch up with the organization because you're going to find out why is performance not happening, why are people frustrated, why are they not doing and delivering and this individual not delivering as they need to. So eventually, it can come to the forefront. But
it doesn't mean that it doesn't occur. How often does that happen in your experiences with working with companies, Vicki? How often does that happen that the buddy that they hired that doesn't work out, and it's obviously your people are a reflection of you? How often does that happen in your experience?
Well, I think it depends on the organization that you go into. I will say that over my span of career, you're going to always find leaders who want to hire people that they know, people that they're familiar with, people that are like them, because that's their comfort zone. You're going to always have that. The question becomes, does that individual truly have the competencies that I need within this organization and within this role to take it forward? If they don't, am I willing to get others to hide the fact that they don't know because they're going to help them? But they come from the same school of thought, but they're going to help them overcome these challenges so it doesn't, I don't have to get rid of my friends. That can happen in any organization and at any level, right? You also have the situation where they bring them in They know that they're my friend, that they're not working out. And I'm just going to move them from one job to another job because, oh, they're not working in that job. That's okay. We're not going to fire them. I love them, right? They're my friends. They got them in the door. Let's move them from point A to point B, right? But if that individual doesn't have good leadership skills and is expected to be a leader, whether they're in Department A or Department B, the people who are in that organization are going to set the tone in terms of whether they like it or don't like it based upon how happy they are, how content they are, how productive they are, and how much they're willing to stay within that organization. Otherwise, they leave. So it happens all the time in different magnitudes and in different ways.
Oh, wow. Vicky, we got to take our first break. Hold up, dog. We need to take our break. We'll be right back. This is Game On Business Talk with D. Anthony Miles. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. You are tuned in to Game On Business Talk Radio with Dr. D. Anthony Miles. We'll be right back.
Hi, we're back. This is Game On Business Talk with D. Anthony Miles. And let us continue our discussion on bad management practices and companies. We have our wonderful guest, Vicky Wright Hamilton, founder of managing partner of VWH Consulting. Vicky, let's pick up on what we talked about in the first segment. You were talking about when managers make bad decisions in terms of hiring on nepotism. Tell us why that's a problem.
Well, it can become a problem if the individual that they're hiring it from, you know, that they're working with is not equipped with the skill set to be able to do the job. Now, we all know that, you know, if I am hiring someone that does have the skill set, but it's nepotism. The challenge with that is how it impacts the other employees that you're working with that are around you. Because if they begin to feel like, oh, they only got hired because that was their brother or their sister or their whatever, this is going, you know, I'm not one of those. I'm going to be mistreated. I'm not going to be included. You know, it can set a negative tone. But if that person that comes in, that even though it is a nepotism kind of situation and they're competent and they're skilled and they're good leaders, then people around them don't look so much at the fact that they're nepotism because they're good. Now, that doesn't mean that they forget it. It just means it's a little bit more acceptable, right? Because they want to know that just because I'm not in that situation, that I'm still going to get the same consideration.
That is an interesting observation. I was just thinking about this while you were talking, and this is why you have cultures that, you know, that can be sexist, because case in point, and this is another dynamic to the bad management and what you were talking about, what if they were forced to hire an employee that was highly qualified? They didn't want to hire them. They were overruled by, say, a search committee, you know, management, and they were forced to hire the best person for the job. And then the manager sabotages that person because that wasn't their first choice. Have you seen that, Vicky?
Oh, absolutely. So there are lots of times where, as a leader and a manager, you know, within an organization, that you may be highly encouraged to hire an individual, and you do so. And then when that happens and it wasn't the person of your choice, you're going to try to find – some bad managers try to find every reason they can why this person wasn't a good choice because they didn't do what they wanted them to do, right? And the challenge is that the manager begins to feel like, I didn't even have the choice of hiring who I wanted and needed for this job. You made me do it, and now I'm going to make sure that the person that you put in here is not going to be successful. I'm going to scrutinize everything they do. And what can happen in that situation is that they will scrutinize down to the letter of what that job description said, responsibility said, and it can be minor. Everybody makes mistakes. We're not perfect. No one is 100% perfect. So they could be very qualified for the job, and they make a minor mistake, and something happens. And then that leader blows it all out of proportion. See, I told you this was the wrong person for the job. You should have let me hire who I want to hire. And then the challenge with that is that manager has the employee in the palm of their hands from an evaluation perspective, from a perspective that I can tell others whether you should be promoted or not, whether you should get additional opportunities, whether you should be considered for attending special leadership events, et cetera. And my thing is that an employee has to recognize that you cannot let just your direct manager that has bad practices set your destiny for your career. That's the power and the importance of relationships throughout the organization when you come in.
Now, Vicki, that's an excellent point. I want you to expound on this. So it sounds kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're going to plan that person's failure just like you could plan somebody's success. Is that right?
That is absolutely right. That's absolutely right. You can plan that I'm going to do everything I can to make this individual fail, or I hired who I wanted to hire, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that this person shines, successful, and is above all everyone else in terms of their abilities, their opportunities, and getting recognition.
Oh, my God. Vicki, I'm afraid to ask you this. How prevalent is this in American companies, what you just said?
It happens everywhere. It happens all the time. I mean, it's and like I said, the magnitude of things like this occurring on a enterprise level of a company goes back again to how much that leadership accepts those behaviors and allows that to exist within the culture. But there's always time to do that. You can't control it down to, because we're all individuals. We all have the ability to have our own thoughts. And it could be my opinion. You're asking me as a leader, my opinion of this individual. And that's the challenge when it comes to subjective ratings versus objective ratings. Because when you can prove something that is factual, when it's numbers and things like that that you can prove, it's hard to refute that even when you're trying to make someone fail. But when you have to take in the subjective component, I can make them say anything I want them to say, good, bad, ugly, or indifferent.
So wow.
That is the challenge. That's the challenge there.
I got a question for you. I know you've got experience with this, Vicki. You're the master here. You're the Zen master here. Well, let's take this at the hiring level when they make bad hiring decisions. And I've seen this too, Vicki. You've probably seen this as well. A guy has an MBA like you and myself, okay, with, you know, performed well, has a track record of every company he's been to, and then a guy wants to hire his buddy, doesn't have a graduate degree, sometimes it's been no degree, and a guy will say, well, education doesn't mean anything here. Have you seen that?
Absolutely. So, again, there's a lot of factors that go into that, and I think that it's important for the audience to understand that, people make excuses, people make decisions based upon what they ultimately want for their goal. So if the goal is that person that did not have a degree was to get into the door, and they said, well, education isn't, that important, okay. Let's take the basis for a minute that it isn't that important, that I got an MBA, this person doesn't, and education isn't important. But what about all the other requirements for this position, the things that anyone who has to work this job has to have the skill set for to move forward? What about the comparison of those things, right? Mm-hmm. And can you show that this individual without a degree can do the exact same role that I can do and has the same capability? And I believe this is going to come up to be more and more important as we move forward. And the reason why is talent management has to begin to be done differently than it has been in the past.
Absolutely. Wow. Just have some people, Vicki. You know this because, like I said, this is well within your, experience. People don't hire who they should. They hire who they want to hire. Is that right?
That's right. That is correct. That's right.
And they bring down an organization, right?
Right. I am empowered as a leader to hire who I want to hire, bring in who I want to bring in. So you are entrusting your managers and leaders to make the right decision. And because we're all human and we have the power of choice to do what we want to do, you're going to have instances where individuals won't do the right thing.
Now, I've seen this too, Vicki, where you heard of a law called, I think a plumbing attorney told me this, Chris told me this, the right to promote. And what that is when a person applies for a job or whatever, I think it's internal or external. I think it's more internal. And you hired your buddy, and again, your buddy doesn't even meet the minimum of the qualifications, okay? Mm-hmm. And this person gets an attorney, and I believe the law is right to promote, and they go get an attorney, and they force you, whoever made the hiring decision, to prove how this person was the most qualified for the job. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes. And I want to tie this back to something that we talked about earlier in the show when it comes to bullying. Anytime an individual that works within a company decides that I'm going to get an attorney because I've been mistreated or I feel like, you know, I haven't been getting an opportunity, you mm-hmm. basically put a bullseye on your back.
Right? Of course. Right.
And as you do that, you have to be willing not only to stand up for what you believe in, but be willing to recognize the fact that even if they put me in this role, they're going to do everything they can to help me fail because they didn't want me in the role in the first place.
Right.
So I think that, you know, when you get in these kinds of situations, you really have to think about what's most important. Where do I want to put my energy? What do I really want to stay here? If this is the kind of culture and environment I'm going to have to work in anyway, is this really the kind of role that I want to be in? And the bad manager who's doing it will eventually get a reputation because, like I said, you know, today communication is on all kinds of platforms. And
Absolutely.
There's all kinds of ways to make a reputation very negative and known where we didn't have a lot of these capabilities years ago.
How do people in their right mind conduct these bad management practices like hiring? You're already starting off, to me, based on what you said, Vicki, you're already starting off on the left side of zero because you don't hire the best people. Doesn't hiring smart people make sense instead of hiring your buddies? Is that right?
It makes sense as long as I'm not intimidated. It makes sense as long as I don't think you're going to take my job. It makes sense as long as I don't think that you're going to go against the values of what I'm trying to do for me, myself, and I. Versus us, we, or the organization. So, you know, does it make sense? Sure. But we have a lot of people who are thinking about only I. You know, the favorite radio station. What's in it for me? Right? That station can really be impactful when it comes to making bad management decisions. I am doing whatever I want to do for me. I ain't thinking about you. This is all about what's best for me. So if I interview somebody and they're great and I go, oh, my God, they're better than I am. Oh, no, they can't come in here. I can't give them that opportunity. Yes, they're the best.
What?
They'll want my job.
People actually think like that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
And that's why you have bad management practices where people will step on each other, you know, to climb the ladder, as they used to say. It's like, I want to get promoted. I'll do it by any means necessary. If I got to step on you, step over you, put you down, I'll do whatever I have to do to get up that ladder, right? Because it's all about what I want and thinking of self only. Good managers and leaders think about collaboration and how I help you and realize that they're going to go further and do better when they put good people on their team. I always hired people smarter than I was, right? Because I knew that if I did, we collectively as a team would do well. Bad managers don't think like that. you know? And then sometimes, that's one perspective of that. The other perspective is sometimes you have bad managers because they don't know any better. They have not been given the skills. They have not had the opportunities to learn. They have not been shown, because of the environment they're in, what good management looks like. You know, think about it. If you're hired into a company and you're working a position and you end up staying in that company for 10, 11, 12 years and it's the only job you've worked, that's the only culture you know. You leave that job, you go to another job as a manager, and the culture is totally different and it doesn't operate that way. You do what you've been trained to do and what you're familiar with. So I will say there's also an opportunity where businesses and companies have to look at when bad management exists and understand, is this a case where we have the chance to retool them, to re-educate them, to give them new ways of thinking as a bad manager to help them
grow. Hey, Vicky, we got to take our next break. I want to get back into that. Hold that thought. We got to take our next break. We'll be right back. This is Game On Business Talk with D'Anthony Miles. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. You are tuned in to Game On Business Talk Radio with Dr. D'Anthony Miles. We'll be right back.
Hi, we're back. This is Game On Business Talk with D'Anthony Miles. Let us continue our discussion on bad management and bad management practices in companies. We have our wonderful guest, Vicky Wright Hamilton, founder and managing partner of VWH Consulting. Vicky, let's pick up what we were talking about when you say some people, they get ingrained in a culture and it's to their detriment when they keep maintaining those bad management practices. So what were you saying about that again?
So what I was saying was is that, you know, sometimes you have individuals that, you know, worked in an organization for a long period of time. And let's say that that culture wasn't the most ideal culture for some people, you know, because culture is individualized. Some people like that environment. Some people may not. But let's say that you were in that culture and you learned all of these management practices, right? You leave that job and you go to another job and you try to utilize the same management practices. And that culture is very different. And the approach that you were using to step on people to move up, the approach you were using of hiring my buddy to get him in because that's the way it works around here, the approach that you were using of, you know, condescending people, you know, being very condescending to people in meetings. That's just the culture. That's the way it was. So you come over to this new organization doing the same thing, and they go, whoa, 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 whoa. We don't operate that way here. So sometimes you have to, as an organization, determine, is this person someone that could learn something new? Are they going to fit? And that's where we get into cultural fit within individuals when they start looking at them. Are we going to be able to give them a new way of thinking and they're open to it? Or has this culture that they come from been embedded in them so much and this is just the way they are and we're not going to have an opportunity because there really just isn't a cultural fit because our values are not the same. We don't operate the same. And the best thing for us to do is to cut our ties. So I was just saying that sometimes you get bad managers because they took old ways of thinking because that's all they've ever known, and they bring it into a new environment, and they may need to be get the opportunity to have new tools and techniques and philosophies and methodologies and other things given to them. But everybody's not open to that, and if they aren't open, it just isn't going to work out.
That is an interesting observation. I want to ask you this, Vicky. This is really just eating at me. And say if there's a talented individual in a company and this bad management refuses to either promote this person or put this person where they could do some good, and then somebody steals that talent. How often does that happen because of bad management?
All the time. People normally don't leave companies, they leave people.
Wow.
The employees, when they get ready to leave an organization, you know, if you have a great boss, a lot of times you're like, I just don't want to leave my boss. I love him. I love my job. I love what I'm doing. and they're looking, you know, they're really enjoying what they're doing. But if you have bad manager and they're mistreating you, they're not doing what they need to do, you are in control of your own career. And therefore, you get to a point where you're like, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm not going to take this anymore. I don't deserve it. I want to grow. I want to develop. I want more opportunities, and I'm going to leave. So employees usually leave people, not companies.
That is really interesting. And do they just don't get it? Because, you know, people are always on the lookout for talent, and that's how people, you know, they steal your talent. And companies are not worried about somebody stealing their top draft pick, the top employees, because of bad management. Does bad management understand that, Vicki?
Well, you know, if when we start talking about hiring talent and looking for talent, you know, and this is where I said that, you know, leadership and their thought processes and their policies become really, really important. Because if you have a bad manager, bad management, and leadership is also bad at the top. You got bad after bad, right? And so when people are trying to go into that organization and get an opportunity, they're like, this is bad all the way up the top, right? And then the work doesn't get done because the people need to do it. Businesses begin to recognize that when they're not able to get the talent in to get the work done. But I think it's also important to understand everybody, every individual is not the same. Every individual doesn't want to move up the ladder. Every individual isn't looking for, you know, necessarily growth. Some people just are looking, you know, where they want to go to work, do what they have to do, come home, and call it a day, right? They're they're okay if they don't get promoted. They're okay if they don't get additional opportunity. That may not be the desires of their heart. That may not be where they are. And when it comes to the way the leader treats them and where they are, some people just say, I just accept it. It's a job. It comes with the territory and move forward, okay? And then the organization does not lose those particular individuals. But that's not the majority. That's the exception. And so that's why when talent is gone, when talent is leaving, it doesn't become to the top that there's a challenge until numbers start to grow of the amount of attrition that an organization is beginning to have. So it has to reach a certain quantifiable percentage that the leader of the organization pays attention to before it actually gets on the radar. If it's not high enough, then just the fact that people are leaving may not reach to the top in terms of how they're looking at the enterprise or the overall success of that organization. Because if the numbers are too small, it's like, okay, people come and go all the time. But if the numbers begin to escalate and you begin to find out, oh, my God, we got all these positions open, and we don't have anybody to put the product together. We don't have anybody to get the product out the door. Then it becomes a challenge and an issue, and they look at it when it reaches a certain percentage, whatever their threshold is for that particular organization.
Vicki, you made me think of something while you were talking about this, you know, with people that have talent that leave because of bad management. And to give me your opinion on this, that's why you should have exit interviews. Is that right?
Absolutely. Exit interviews are very, very powerful because as people are leaving organizations, understanding why they're leaving is important. And I would like to say this to your audience. If you leave an organization and it was a bad experience, give the gift to others by letting them know what worked and what didn't work. So that hopefully some of those changes, if there is a desire, can be made for the organization to make it a better place for others. But like I said, there has to be that desire. And I do think that exit interviews give a lot of powerful indicators, powerful information for leadership moving forward. But again, the leadership has to care. They have to want it. They have to want to think about change and moving forward.
It's been my experience, Vicki, and you make an excellent point. Good companies have exit interviews because the exit interview, from what I've seen and what I read, is maybe we can convince this person not to leave. Maybe we need to find out what's going on. Bad companies do not do exit interviews. Would you agree with that?
On the most part, yes, I would. I would say that, you know, companies that, and it doesn't have to be a bad company. It can be a company that's not looking to really make change, if you will. A company that is, you're leaving on your own, you know, we're at an at-will state, you know, you work because you want to work and we can let you go when we don't need the position anymore, et cetera. So if they have those kinds of philosophies, just because it's their philosophy, they don't do it. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad, if you will. However, that is a bad practice not to do exit interviews. Exit interviews are some of the most powerful ways to get information, especially when people feel like they don't have anything to lose from that, you know, from that perspective of being honest and giving constructive feedback. When it comes to getting individuals, you know, where you want to change individuals' minds, to be honest with you, in good companies and good management practices, you've done that well before the exit interview. Before the exit interview ever happens, management, when you're getting ready to leave, when you turn that notice in, is working from that point up until the day you walk out the door to convince you not to leave, that they want your talent, they need you, and they're willing to talk to you, and they're willing to understand what the problems are in order to fix them. So by the time it gets to the exit interview, it's almost too late at that point. But they may use that, good companies and good practices at the exit interview will use that as the very, very last attempt to say, okay, we've been trying to keep you. We've done this. Are you sure that there's no way that we can keep you before you leave?
Well, this brings my next question, Vicki. Why don't more companies do exit interviews? What's the problem with that? They don't want to know, or what was it, ignorance? What's your experience with that?
Well, you know, I think a lot of companies, when it comes to exit interviews and not doing it, there's lots of schools of thought out there, and you'll see lots of reasons why when you talk to companies about why that's not done. Time being one of them, you know, didn't have time to do the interview, wasn't necessarily one of our top priorities in terms of getting, you know, feedback. We're at an at-will state, you know, let people come and go as they need to for their growth and their development, et cetera. And so, you know, it is a practice that I believe helps in terms of understanding, but it has to be a value. You know, we all have values. And it has to be a value of that company and organization. It has to be a value that they want to learn about their people and what's going on and the environment and the atmosphere and what's happening. You have to want it. But I will say this, that as times are changing, companies that aren't doing exit interviews need to really think about it, because the power of the communication on all platforms everywhere, the power of, it's kind of like that good customer service you talk about. People can go out and write a review about anything and spread it everywhere, and it goes, you know, negativity spreads faster than positivity any day, it seems to be, you know. And then the more negative that's out there, the harder it is to change. But with the power of all of that and the fact that talent is becoming harder and harder to find, and that there's going to be less talent available as years go on because baby boomers stop having babies and the next generations aren't having as many children, companies that aren't thinking about it better wake up.
Wow. Vicki, let's hold that thought. We're going to take our next break, and we got to really get into some of that other things that we're talking about in bad management practice. This is Game On. Anthony Miles will be right back.
Don't touch that dial. You are tuned in to Game On Business Talk Radio with Dr. D. Anthony Miles. We'll be right back.
Hi, we're back. This is Game On Business Talk with D. Anthony Miles. Let us continue our discussion on our topic today, bad management and bad management practices in companies. We have our wonderful guest, Vicki Wright Hamilton, founder and managing partner of VWH Consulting. God, Vicki, you've given us an earful this morning, or this afternoon, or today. Lordy. Why are these companies, how are they still in business with these bad practices? Can you avoid bad management? Can you avoid it? Or is it, it's like an organism, it picks up whatever the people want it. How does this happen?
So you can't eliminate it. So therefore, you can't completely avoid it because we're all humans. And as you're talking about, you know, people, there might be a bad apple in the mix. However, what you can do is do better effective interviewing when you are bringing individuals on, and not just think about the functional skill sets and capabilities of the role they're going into, but also think about their ability to empathize, their ability to communicate, their ability to make decisions. And there's ways to do this, from behavioral interviews to doing interviews that you're giving them cases to read and to solve. There's all kinds of ways to find out what their capabilities are, not to mention assessments that people do. You know, some organizations require that you take an assessment so they understand your management style, they understand your personality, they understand what makes you tick before they bring you in. So it's really, can you help to prevent it? Absolutely. Can you 100% eliminate it? No, you cannot. It's very, very hard because we are, you know, as people come in, I'll say it again, everyone has the power of choice. I might walk in the door and be excellent, and down the road, because when I come in and see how things are and I start thinking about I start doing bad choices that make me become a bad leader or a bad manager. When you hired me, I was great. So the deal is that it is, I believe, a great practice of the organization to ensure that the values of the individual coming in match the values of where the organization wants to go and what they believe are important for the results that they want to reach. Also, that individual can help to further the cultural set of that organization, the culture impact of that organization throughout the people that they're going to lead and manage as they're within the company. So there are ways to make that happen, but you can never eliminate it, unfortunately.
Vicki, I have to ask you this. I was thinking about this when you were making your point. Is it better if you're a new manager coming to a situation, you get hired by a company, is it better for you to bring in the people that you know that can get the job or work with the people that are already there? What's been your experience with that?
Now, that is $1 million question. And let me say this. Anytime you get new leadership and there's over an organization, it's known, I mean, that sometimes they had some right-hand people that they used to work with that they may want to bring in. Okay? Mm-hmm. I believe that as a management practice, it is incumbent upon the new leader first, the new manager, the first thing they do is to do an assessment of the talent that they already have. Understand where the gaps are, right? Understand where the gaps are within the organization. And if they had somebody that they worked with before that they want to put in the mix, for this role or opportunity because they want to fill that gap, that may happen, right, in terms of making that happen. And that's a good practice as long as you know what that individual can do and how they fit within that organization. So does it happen? Yes, it does. People do it all the time. You take people with you that you can trust, that you know that can work with you. But the very first thing of a management practice is to understand what I don't have. Because just to bring somebody in that's good, that you trust, that can work with you, to have them in the organization, but not really fulfill a need, right, can bring about negative results down the road, because that person may not be getting everything they need and want, even though they enjoy working for you. if they are a person that wants to grow and develop and they don't have that opportunity, you could end up losing them anyway. So I think it's really important that you assess your organization, assess the gap, understand what you need. If there's someone out there that you worked with before that can fulfill that gap, they need to get into the interview loop so that you can interview them for a potential opportunity, as well as if there's anyone internal to the organization that may work in a different department that has comparable skill sets that could work that position too. So I think, you know, yes, it happens. We do it all the time. I mean, I've done it before, but I had a gap to fill. So I hired somebody that I'd worked with before. There wasn't anybody in the organization. So I've done it as well. But I do think it's a prudent thing to come in and understand what you have and don't have first.
I have seen people not do that. And they made bad decisions. And it's basically a popularity contest. They didn't do an assessment of the department. And then it gets to be like what you're alluding to earlier, a popularity contest. I like who I like. This guy hardly ever talks. I don't like him. He may be the best guy in the department, but you're fooled by who you like and who's catering to you. And you make bad decisions based on that, and you end up running the department into the ground. Have you seen that, Vicki?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, when you get into favoritism and we get into the fact that, you know, this person can do it and this person can't, but I want this person anyway, right? That's who I want in my organization. That's who I want to work for me, and it doesn't work out. Absolutely, those things happen all the time, all the time.
Good. We might have to bring you back for a therapy session on this. This is really getting good.
Well, we can arrange that, too. You know, there are solutions to all of this, right? But it all starts with, you know, what are your goals and where do you want to be and what kind of organization or company do you want to be known for? That's what it boils down to.
Why are we having these guys that are still conducting these bad management practices? Is it that they get set in their ways or they're not up to speed on the new things that are in organizations? You don't have to micromanage people. Vicki, does micromanaging work based on your experience?
Well, I think that depends on the individual. So sometimes you have team members that work for you that they require and need that micromanagement. Where it does not work is when you have individuals that understand their role, can do their job, they understand the ramifications, they get it, they know it. They just need you to tell them what it is that you're looking for, and they can run off and go do it on their own and come back with a great product. You don't micromanage those because that's who you lose. That's the talent that you will lose because it's like, wait a minute, I know how to do my job. Let me just go and do my job and get you what you need. I'll get you the results. I don't need you to micromanage me. There are other individuals who need that micromanagement because they need more structure. They need more guidance in terms of moving forward. So that's why as a manager, to be a good manager, you need to understand and be able to assess the difference. A bad manager sometimes might think everybody needs micromanagement because it's my way or the highway, and I'm going to micromanage everything you do to make sure it comes out the way I want. That's a totally bad management practice because it's not individualized to what individual people on that team require or need. So micromanagement depends upon what individuals need. Some people need more guidance and help than others. But when you start micromanaging everybody just as a style and say, if you work for me, I micromanage you regardless, that's not a good management practice.
That is really, really interesting. I want to ask you this. I wasn't sure how to fit this in here, but with these companies that have bad management, or bad practices, rather, are you seeing a lot of this, you know, these things and sexual harassment that are coming up? And could you expound on that a little bit, Vicki? Why are we still dealing with sexual harassment at the job, the workplace? What is that about?
Well, we're going to, as long as you have human beings, you're going to deal with something, right? And so the challenge is that I think what's happening is we're hearing more about sexual harassment and challenges in every industry, right? You start to hear more about it in entertainment. You start to hear more about it, you know, in high-powered positions and organizations and government and things like that. So I think there's more awareness because people are willing, again, as I said, communication on these platforms is something else. People are willing to speak more and let it be known. Now, sometimes they want to let it be known because there's some kind of harassment behind that or bullying that they think is behind that because or lack of opportunity or whatever it may be for them. But people are willing to speak more about sexual harassment that's happening. I think organizations and companies have a responsibility to ensure that they are crystal clear in what's tolerated and not tolerated, you know, when it comes to behaviors within the organization, sexually and otherwise, right? I think that's critical. But sexual harassment, it has existed as long as you have opposite sex, the same sex, people who care about people, whomever they may be, whoever their significant others, whatever they're attracted to in a business together. So as long as you have people of all types, shapes, sizes, kinds in an organization, then you have the opportunity for sexual harassment to exist. Again, you can minimize by giving education, by letting them know what's tolerated and what isn't. But you're not going to necessarily eliminate it because of people having the power of choice, as we talked about it before. So if I happen to work in an organization and I'm attracted to this individual and I like this individual and I want to approach this individual and the individual is like, I'm not interested, but I still want to make something happen, and I get into this harassment situation with them because that was my choice of what I saw. I could have had all the training in the world. You could have told me everything about the company doesn't accept it. But as a person, I made the choice to do it. So, again, they can't eliminate it, but they definitely can have an impact on making sure that they take it seriously. They educate and they investigate anything that has been cited when it comes to sexual harassment. And it's out there. And it will always be out there as long as we have people attracted to people.
Right. I was at a workshop for sexual harassment. I think a guy, made himself look like a jerk. He said, I don't never hear about sexual harassment against women, harassing men. And I think the moderator said, well, now you bring up an interesting point. I'm glad you brought that up. He said 90% of the time it's a man harassing a woman. The percentages of women sexually harassing men at work are less than, I think, 10%. And a guy just shut up. he put his tail between his legs. But, Vicki, we're almost out of time. I want to ask you, how can the audience get a hold of you if they want you to come in and speak or something? We got to have to bring you back on another show. I had a great show in mind about sexual harassment. We're going to have to do a whole show on that if you'd be interested.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much. And I want to thank you for the opportunity. You can reach me at Vicki, V-I-C-K-I, Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, Hamilton, Hamilton.com. You can also reach me by phone at 770-833-7118. I look forward to any opportunity to potentially serve you and to collaborate.
Awesome, awesome. Vicki, thank you so much for being on the show. Again, I'm going to have to bring you back. I'd like to do a show on sexual harassment if you're interested. And we'll have to definitely bring you back. This is a wonderful show today. Let me go ahead and close out the show. Well, we're out of here. This is Game On Business Talk with D. Anthony Miles. We had an awesome show for you today. Thank you for joining us. We want to thank our guests again, Vicki Wright Hamilton, founder and managing partner of VWH Consulting. And we want to definitely thank you for joining us today. So we'll see you next week. And remember, Game On Business Talk with D. Anthony Miles. We're out of here.
Thank you for tuning in to Game On Business Talk Radio with host D. Anthony Miles.